And welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, and I'm glad they gave you some time off from City Hall there to come, to break from the tweeting, to come actually be here today, Adam, because it sounds like it was quite the journey for you.
Oh, yeah, it was definitely a long...
Wakey, wakey, time to put on the show.
Yeah, I know. Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Just go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen, and you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast from Podbean on the Guelph Politicast channel, or you can subscribe through iTunes. Today, we will be talking about electoral reform. The parliamentary report has come back outlining recommendations on how to proceed with reforming the electoral system, but there may be signals that the Liberals are about to backtrack on that promise. So what do the options look like? And then we will consider the Toronto proposal to toll the two main highways into the downtown core as a way for the city to raise needed money for transit and infrastructure. Is this a bold move by Mayor John Tory, or is he overreaching? And then finally, we will have the inevitable Trump date. There is so much to discuss as the president-elect forms his cabinet, avoids security briefings, starts new Twitter feuds, and has begun today his victory lap before taking the oath of office next month. And we will try to condense all that down into 15 minutes.
Tough call.
I know. But first, the passing of a man who is as controversial as he was impactful. Fidel Castro passed away last Friday, one of the last of the Cold Warriors. His impact on politics in the Western Hemisphere is difficult to measure, almost as difficult as trying to judge how one is supposed to react to the man that was admired by some, seen as a dictator to others. And I think we will get to that political situation in a sec, but this was, he was a brutal dictator. He did some good things, but, no one's, the old Archie Bunker line, say what you want about Mussolini, but at least he made the trains run on time. But...
Well, yeah, a little different, but...
Yeah, but, not to say that right. Fidel Castro was a Mussolini, but it is difficult, just in going back and reading about Fidel Castro, because if you go to South Africa and you mention the name Fidel Castro, you will get a very different response than if you go to Miami and mention Fidel Castro.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It is, I wouldn't say a difficult man. He is a difficult man to analyze, I guess, or to break down without putting your foot in it, as the Prime Minister did in some ways. I've heard a couple references. One was that he was known as Canada's favorite dictator, which sort of...
It's legit.
It's sort of true.
It's fair. Yeah.
There's a lot. But was he a remarkable leader? I don't know. He was a titan, I guess. When it comes, a cold warrior, like the survivor of that whole period in time where the world came as close as it did to nuclear annihilation. That's no joke. I mean, so he was. Let's call him a player. True. Castro was a player.
He was a straight-up player.
Straight-up player, because I don't know what else to say without somebody saying, you love that commie bastard, didn't you? Oh, I shouldn't have said that. Sorry. A little bit carried away. No, I saw that online somewhere. So that was a direct quote. And
It's hard not to get mail either way.
Yes.
I think...
Harper's Sun called him an embarrassment. I mean, everybody has an opinion on Castro, right? Like
Ben Harper.
Ben Harper.
Not the... Good Ben Harper, who's still bad. Since you opened the door, the thing about the Trudeau and sort of becoming an international whipping boy. First of all, because with Marco Rubio,
I called him it was Ted Cruz called him a young socialist. The young socialist has no idea what he speaks of. I was like, what?
True story. Trudeau is like literally 14 minutes younger than Ted Cruz. Maybe not literally, but they're in the same age bracket. They're
young
at least a couple
socialist,
of years.
I tell you.
They're
youthful,
a couple of years
I guess.
Apart.
Yeah.
Well, he's certainly more youthful than Ted old man Cruz. But when little Marco decided to have an opinion on the matter. I would never go out and celebrate the life of Fidel Castro. For all the reasons, like, you know, just the sheer, you know, ferocity of the violence against the Batista loyalists, you know, the work camps for, you know, LGBT people, mm-hmm. the, you know, suppression of dissidents, all these people who like piled onto banana boats and set sail for Florida, just feeling the oppression. But the flip side of it is I was sickened by the street party in Little Havana, too. It's like, I don't care how bad the person is. You just don't go out and you throw a freaking street party for the death of someone. I mean, I hated it when Bin Laden died. I didn't feel... I mean, Bin Laden was a terrible person who, like, orchestrated the death of thousands of people. And not just in 9/11, but, I mean, cumulatively over several decades. But, you know, when somebody dies, you don't throw a party.
Yeah, and it's an un-Canadian thing, I think, to do that. Maybe that's why we object to it so much. Because when Thatcher died, people did the same thing.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Dance on the grave, spit on the grave, whatever. Everybody has their pros and cons. I'll mention the pros since you mentioned the cons.
why not?
You know, things that are pointed to in terms of the Castro Revolution and things that came afterwards was that they had a very high literacy rate in Cuba, universal health care, low infant mortality, lower than the U.S., by the way.
Yeah.
And many other, I'm going to say many other points. No, it's things like that. People own the doctors, sending doctors all over the world. And as you say, these, you can't say anything bad about him in certain parts of Africa because he actually sent thousands of troops when, but again, that
was anti-apartheid before it was cool.
For sure. But again, that was an extension of the Cold War, though. It was surrogate parties fighting it out in Angola and what became Namibia and, of course, South Africa. So that, I mean, that alone in itself is probably several volumes worth of book. But yeah, and that's what's difficult about it. And of course, there is a way to do the obituary. And it sounds like Trudeau. What was Michelle Rempel's comment? Was she thought she was reading the Beaverton when she read it? But
first of all, Michelle Rempel's never read the Beaverton in her life.
You don't think so? I don't know, but
I doubt it. Well, and then she chastised Trudeau for not going to the funeral. So it's like you can't have it both ways, Michelle.
No, but David Johnson's going. He's technically the head of the government, right? So
true, but I mean,
take the heat off of the Libs maybe a little bit and.
Likely, but the thing of it is that I think people have forgotten is that Castro was a family friend.
He was
of
a
the
pallbearer, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't he a pallbearer?
He was a pallbearer. He was honorary pallbearer at Pierre Trudeau's funeral.
And that's
he was
huge.
A friend of the family. And Alexandra Trudeau wrote a piece, I think it was in The Star, but it basically like explained like the Trudeau connection to the Castros.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when you look at that, you can kind of see why the obit from Justin Trudeau was a bit more florid than perhaps suited people's taste. Mm-hmm. But I understood that. This is a man who was thought well of and spoken well of in the Trudeau home. There's pictures of young Justin Trudeau being held by Fidel Castro mm-hmm. from that visit in 76.
Because he's actually his son, right? That's the best thing that's come out of this. Like, he's actually Fidel's boy. Who came up with that? Ted Cruz, probably. Must be his son.
It's a Manchurian candidate situation.
Yeah, probably.
Well, I mean, Ted Cruz's father did kill Kennedy, so and Ted Cruz himself was the Zodiac killer, as we all know. So he's no stranger.
Totally true.
He's no stranger to conspiracies. So it's I think that part of it was missing from the and it's like some of the Trudeau obituary things or Trudeau eulogy things on Twitter were amusing, and I will grant people that because normally these like right wing henpecking things aren't really that funny. No. But I do think when people were analyzing where the prime minister was coming from, they did forget that little thing. It's like, it's, you know, if you were Pierre Trudeau's son, chances are you might have a different opinion of Fidel Castro beyond the ordinary, let's say.
Yeah, and it's interesting who's going to the there's no leaders like Obama and Putin aren't going to the funeral. They're sending mm-hmm. representatives, I believe.
Sure.
Who else is going? The North Korean envoy, Robert Mugabe. I mean, if Robert Mugabe, who's 95, can make it, you would think Yeah, others could. And Danny Glover. Danny Glover will be there. So yeah. A star-studded funeral for Fidel Castro. But interestingly, what's come up from this as well was Trump's comments about wanting Cuba to make a better deal. And if they don't make a better deal, you know, it's Trump speak. We're going to get to Trump eventually, right?
Because it's Trump speak. We need to English dictionary.
I have no idea what that means. Like, we're going to make a better deal. If we don't make a better deal, then, you know, then what? Like, dot, dot, dot. Yeah.
Did you see Trump's first tweet on the subject?
No, what was he saying?
Fidel Castro is dead.
Oh,
that is.
I did
that
see
was
that, but
tweet.
I didn't know that was the first one.
That was Fidel. It's like, what should I say?
Thanks,
about
Jones.
This?
Appreciate that. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what he means by a deal either. It's what I mean. What the United States has been doing is like taking off all these embargoes and things, and mm-hmm. all these restrictions and all these travel restrictions.
You can fly there with good reason, though. You can't just fly there like Canadians do. You need some. So there's like. Educational seems to be the blanket.
Well, right? what kind of was missing in the Trump analysis was that the story from, I think it was back in September, that Trump had tried to break the embargo because they this was around 99-2000 when they thought Clinton was going to lift the embargo, and apparently Trump had some business people go in there on the download to try and be the first ones in an embargo lifted Cuba. So, you know,
like, I never did that.
Yeah. I think
it wasn't
that's
me.
An exact
yeah,
quote.
It was, yeah. But, it was me.
So Trump should probably be careful talking smack about Cuba because you got to think Raul Castro's got some stuff ready. The United States reaction to this will be interesting to watch. Not the reaction of Castro's death, of course, but to what will happen when Trump takes office, because this has been, you know, one of the... It's a controversial touchstone, along with the Iran deal and other things that Obama has done to try and rein back the idea that the Soviets might still sneak missiles into Cuba after 60 years.
Somebody going to sneak missiles in there.
Well, we'll see. But no, it's policy that's way overdue. And I Raul Castro is no spring chicken either. He's 85.
No. Hmm.
And just looking back, if they may have been doing this like 10 years ago in terms of like peeling back some of the restrictions and stuff, this is Castro country. I mean, I don't know what will happen when Raul dies. It's
well, this is the thing. If, as far as I understand it, Raul is officially stepping down in 2018 sometime. I don't remember the month, but there is an end date for his tenure.
Right.
Whether he lives it out. I mean, if he has the, you know, stamina or whatever of his brother, like Castro lived at 90, considering everything he went through, that's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
So the odds are good. If the genetics are good, that, you know, Raul will probably finish the term. And it sounds like the party, the Communist Party is not consolidating, but I can't recall now off the top of my head. There's a contender waiting in the wings because that's how they work. Somebody's being groomed for the job.
Yeah.
So I get the impression if that succession does happen, then it probably will be business as usual as Cuba. But the door is opening. And the significant thing will be as to whether Trump decides to go back to the old Cold War setup, whereas this, you know, Obama and company have opened this door and, you know, corporations are slowly moving in and travel restrictions are lifting. And the Miami Cubans that were celebrating so much could probably go back now if they wanted to.
Right.
Now, we're a few generations removed, I guess, two or three at least, from the initial Miami Cubans. But so, I mean, that remains to be seen. So, I mean, you would hope that it would still open, and I don't know if Trump is going to get advice or whatever from people saying, you know, we should probably let this go, or is he going to do the whole, which he thrives on, is the hatred of the other. I know we're talking about Trump later. We've ended up talking about Trump, but it's so significant. I mean, that's the significant relationship. Like I said earlier, that's the relationship that brought the world to the brink. But there is no Soviet Union waiting in the wings now, and there is no... real alignment to China, which was happening at one point as well. They're kind of alone and not completely. They have their friends, lots of friends in South America. Evo Morales, ex-president of Bolivia, will be going. You know, they have their friends in the South. But in terms of power, just sheer raw superpower style size power,
right.
They don't have that backing anymore. So they're still kind of...
Well, there was concern. Floating. There was concern back when Chavez was in charge of Venezuela that they're going to create a new like communist bloc in the South, and I mean that, you know, Chavez is long gone now. Castro is gone. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen in Latin America, South America. I mean, but as was pointed out by many people, those areas have not been helped by interventionist foreign policy on the part of the United States anyway,
whether it was
for good or ill, whether it was to get rid of a dictator or to install a dictator, both of which the United States has done in the last century.
And what was it? 600? Greater, more than 600 assassination attempts on the guy?
Yeah.
Like, what were they trying to kill him with? Like, it sounds like a cartoon. Like, and the cigar blew up and his face just turned black or whatever.
It is Wile E. Coyote level of incompetence on the part of CIA.
So that many attempts and he still made it to 90s, so he should probably get a point for that. But man.
He was indestructible. The only thing that could get him was time.
It was just sheer age.
Well, time's run out for the liberals. They've been waiting for this report to come back on electoral reform, the special parliamentary committee that was majority opposition. It was liberals, conservatives, NDP, and Elizabeth May for representing Green. And it's come back today. It has, as was predicted, it was kind of leaked to the Globe and Mail that it was going to come back with the suggestion that there be a referendum, and that one of the options of the referendum be to keep the status quo. And that is indeed what has been unveiled. The Liberals also following up on on the Globe report, releasing a minority report saying. The Liberals may go forward. They may not hold a referendum. I mean, it's not binding at all, but I mean, it's pretty powerful when it comes back that from a majority of the committee that, you know, there should be a referendum, which is of course the one thing the Liberals did not want to do is have a referendum on this.
No, but it sounds like they should, or they have to. I mean, I think at this point they pretty much have to, considering the promises Elizabeth May and others going on the record. And we know that during the election, that whole saw about this will be the last first past the post election. Yeah. We're going to stop. I mean, this is part of the problem with these committees, and the fact that it is non-binding is that a lot of, you know, they give these advice and then the dusty report, or now the dusty old email server just sits and languishes in an old cupboard somewhere. But yeah, so the recommendation, of course, was that the people, this, I think it's at least 700 opinions on the matter, that the people want proportional representation, that they should the majority of the testimony was for that, and that they should have a referendum. And I found this interesting, too. Have you heard of the Gallagher score? There's a whole body of science. There's this equation, and it's like, whoa, it's super mathy when you see it. That they need to, it's not just going to be proportional representation. The suggestion is that they come up with a system, whatever that may be, that the Gallagher score is within five or less, so that it's the percentage between the number of votes and the number of seats, and the gap between that has to be 5% or less.
Right.
So, which will lead, presumably, to the evening out of the whole thing, rather than it's like, why did we get 3 million votes and we only have 2 seats? Which I think everybody agrees is ridiculous. But it seems the Liberals are backtracking this. And I was watching Maryam Monsef on a couple of things, and she was incredibly defensive. Like, it wasn't just the normal level of, like, swatting the questions away. This was like, well, I'm going to look at it. We're going to look at it. Like, she was almost in panic mode, really. But something I should mention that people should be aware of is that there's going to be something coming in the mail, and input is still going to be requested for this. And I think anybody tuned into this show, whatever, as we will, should definitely get their input out there as to what they see as the future of the electoral system, because the only way it will change, if change is desired by the majority or the proportion or whatever, then you need to get involved for sure.
Yeah, and this kind of fell on her head. I think they thought it was going to be easier, that they would just, you know, because they had, you know, NDP and Green sort of in theory, and I thought perhaps
conservatives to a degree, right?
The conservatives haven't been very hot on electoral reform because any form of electoral reform that's not first past the post, I mean,
anybody's ever been the government has been like,
yeah,
doesn't care.
I think there was a thought in liberal camp that those who want electoral reform really accept any form it takes, that this report would come back and then they would do what they want, and then people would just be so grateful to have a new kind of electoral reform. What they found was, A, they did all these town halls and all these little feedback meetings. 88% Fair Vote Canada did the math. 88% of the people, 485 people who spoke at these town halls, were in favor of proportional representation. So that's strike one, because the Liberals, it's been reported, favor ranked ballot. I don't think there's been anything official to that effect, but it's sort of accepted knowledge out there in the ether. Strike two is that they had this Commons Committee, initially was majority Liberal with a couple of Conservatives and a couple of NDP, and then in the wake of Grabgate, Trudeau evened that out and put Elizabeth May in and made it Liberal minority, opposition majority, which of course is not going to be in favor of any Liberal, particularly Liberal recommendation. So that's strike two. And then strike three, I think, is this coming back, and then with Monsef saying that we need broad Canadian support. And I'm thinking, well, you know what? You had all these meetings, you had all this process to gather feedback.
And they're going to get more feedback, too.
Well, this is they're asking for more feedback, and it just seems like a delaying tactic. And it's like anyone who cares enough to fill out that survey and put it and stuff it back into the mailbox and send it back to Ottawa is probably someone who already had the wherewithal or the desire to go out to one of these town halls or to write their MP or to make their thoughts known. And again, 85% of those people are saying PR.
Yeah.
So,
but the argument is like, well, it was only 700 people, right?
Those are the people who came out. Those are people who obviously care about the issue.
Yeah, I mean, there has to be someone in there that thinks first past the post is okay, right? Well, it's, what, 20% or less. But yeah, it's weird because there seems to be two channels on this. Monsef is saying the one thing. She's like, well, I'm not. People are saying, oh, proportional representation. She's like, well, I'm not hearing that. But yeah, Trudeau stood up in the House and he said it again. Mm-hmm. He said that will be the last first past the post election. Now, I don't know what it could be if it's not that, because, and it was interesting, some of the suggestions that they made in terms of it's mixed member proportional, which failed dismally in that baby referendum that we had. When was that? 10 years ago?
That was 07.
That's just a long time ago now.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, 2/3 a proportional mix, right? And then I think it's 1/3 of just the seats, which will do the balancing out.
Again, though, with that, the Ontario one, you're talking about, though, that was just kind of dumped out there.
Yeah.
There wasn't I don't remember there being like a province-wide feedback process. It was just the Liberals said, oh, we're going to have a referendum about this. And then it was like in January of 07, they're like, oh, geez, we have to put this together. And they threw a bunch of ideas together and said, what do you think? And then put it on the ballot. And then
failure.
And then 2/3 of the people said, no, this doesn't make any sense. And I was one of those people. And yeah, so, I mean, when you kind of do your homework like an hour before it's due, don't be surprised if you get a bad mark. This is a process where they've been doing the homework. They've been going out and getting the feedback. They've been talking to people. And I think the writing is on the wall.
Fact set.
The question is, will they take that to heart? And will they actually move forward? I mean, the flip side of it is, too, the cabinet's not going to come back with a comment on this till the new year. So that's January.
I'll be like, oh, when everybody's forgotten about it.
Yeah,
oh,
when they're elected.
Full of turkey.
When the Liberal, or not just turkey, because that'll be after New Year, too.
Cranberry.
When they were elected, they said, we're going to have a new system ready to go in 18 months. Well, end of 18 months is April 2017. That
TikTok. Yeah.
We're not going to make that. So they have to make a decision. If they decide to go through with a referendum, they have to organize a referendum. They have to also organize what the ballot is going to look like, what the question is going to be. You have some people who want it to be, do you want to stick with status quo or go with proportional representation? What does proportional representation mean? That's another whole bailiwick. But then Elizabeth May and the NDP came out, members of the committee came out and said, well, we want to also include single transferable ballot and mixed member, and we have all these other options too.
There's lots of options, yeah.
So, So we have to decide what the options are going to be, how the ballot is going to phrase it, and then we have to have a referendum. Now, we're probably talking about fall 2017 at this point.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So that means...
Well, that's what the Liberals are saying, too. It's like, well, the process is too rushed. And the other thing I'm getting from them, too, is that, oh, this
They were the ones who rushed
Well, exactly. They're saying, are y'all going to do this in 10 days? And they're like, hurry up. And then there's this hint of, like, well, it's really too difficult for the voters to understand kind of vibe I'm getting. It's like, well, is it really that difficult? That's... If you get some pie charts out there and say, well, here, you know, these people are going to be from your district and these ones are going to be from a pool of candidates. Like, they do it all over the world. We're probably one of the last jurisdictions that does it this way. I mean, even, you know, the American system is a bit flawed, but their system isn't just the majority wins, as we've seen with Hillary Clinton.
Sure.
And that's you could argue that isn't first past the post. She had the most votes. She didn't win. Right.
Right. Well, so, I mean, in a sense.
Technically, it is first past the post, but if it's first past the post, it's whoever's got all the cookies wins, right? So, or not all of them, 51%. Or the highest amount, right? The top of the bill wins. Such is not the case for the U.S. presidency. And we'll see if it's going to be not the case here as well. But it's too fast, it's too rushed, it's too complicated. It's like you're backtracking. What is the problem? But the Trudeau argument too, when he said, well, you know, this all came about when the people had a government that they didn't really like.
Right. Yeah.
So now that they've got one that they like, which is us. Like, come on,
that
dude.
That was kind of
really?
Self-serving. But
yeah.
I do wonder if there's gamesmanship here, if they're like pulling back and like they're making like they're not. I mean, Tasha Kerrigan wrote a thing on, I think it was on Politics, where she said, you know, she thought like, oh, this is it. They're going to renege on the promise. And I'm like, I'm wondering how much of it is a renege and how much of it is a political calculation that it looks like they're backtracking and then they ramp the pressure up and then they come back and say, well, we could probably do single transferable ballot, which is what they've been pushing for. And then maybe that would make people happy. So. To just have something. It's like, well, they weren't going to do anything. I mean, now we're going to do something, and then maybe that will, you know, let them get the W. And
I don't think Trudeau's going to make a declaration like this is the last one and not have a plan in place, whatever it is, whatever
one
their view of what it should be.
Yeah.
And it may not be the ones that were mentioned about MMP or whatever. It's I would guarantee they've got whatever they want sitting on a plate waiting to say, well, what about this? And then I'm sure the bait will be taken probably because it won't be first past the post anymore. It'll be this other system. But most people are in agreement that it needs to be reformed. So we'll see.
Well, we need to take
Shades of Preston Manning. I don't know how he felt about it or feels about it. I don't really care, actually. But
we need to take the bait from our paid advertisers
indeed.
And our PSAs and play some music. And then we will come back with some more discussion about you know, toll roads
and
that guy in the United States. What's his face? We'll talk about him after the break, too. You are listening to CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
CFRU Archive.
That was the Northern Coast from Calgary, Alberta. And their album's just out, self-released, called Revelry. And I don't think they're touring. Looks like they played the Night Owl in Calgary last week. But who knows? Maybe they'll come our way sometime soon. So the Northern Coast.
And when
in.
And when you see them, tell them you heard them on Open Sources. And they'll say, what?
They'll say, who? Maybe I'll friend them on Facebook and be like, hey.
They should. Everyone should friend us on Facebook.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even John Tory.
Stick around to the end and we'll tell you how to do that.
So speaking of John Tory, he made an announcement last week that he would like to council to consider turning the Don Valley Parkway and the Gardiner Expressway into toll roads. So when you head into Toronto, as a lot of people do every day, and you get into the downtown core, they want to ding you, and they want to ding you for a couple of bucks, and then they want to take that money, and they want to put it into transit and infrastructure, money which Toronto really badly needs in order to improve those services. And, what's interesting about this is that John Tory is going against John Tory on this.
Really?
John Tory was dead set against this when he ran against David Miller, I guess.
That's
it was,
ago.
Yeah, the
Man,
early,
10?
Early aughts.
More, yeah.
Yeah, no, this was when
before
Miller
he hit
ran.
The radio.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this was kind of a surprise, but one that a lot of people do seem to think is it's time to consider, which I found interesting, because the immediate visceral reaction against anything like this is like, nope, nope, nope. Tax dollars.
Can you imagine
kind of
if
thing.
Rob yeah. Ford was still with us, what the reaction
oh my God.
Would be.
I'll do you one better. You know who, you know who CP had, yeah, CP24 had him on.
They did
had,
he lose his cool? I was going to say something else.
Well, first of all, Doug Ford was never cool. Second of
no,
all,
his
I know what you mean.
Reserve.
He was also on with someone from the Canadian Taxpayers Federation.
Oh, of course.
And they're both
it's
like...
It's a tax!
There's a tax! We're getting our tax dollars! But, I mean, for most people, and I think there was a poll done. I know there was a poll done because I went and I bothered to write down the numbers.
Polls, schmolls.
70% of the people in the poll said that they support the idea, especially
oh, wow.
when considering other options like raising property taxes further and having a Toronto sales tax. In the wake of those, and this is kind of the crux of the situation, and it's a problem that's being faced everywhere, is that there's, for cities desperately needing money and who are barred by law to not run deficits, unlike the federal and provincial governments, they need ways to make money, and there are only so many ways they can make money. And this is, I guess, the least objectionable option in the eyes of a lot of people.
Yep, it's all about the revenue tools, as they say, you know, what's coming down the pipe, which isn't much.
That's
and
right.
the infrastructure is crumbling, so the idea of doing this is to, you know, build up. Transit is the main thing. I'm sure it was like the majority of people who were involved with that poll who take transit would have voted for it. I think
yes.
60% of drivers in that poll that you mentioned there mm-hmm. disapprove of this. And of course they would, because you're going to get dinged another couple bucks a day. But I guess the idea is that maybe if you get dinged enough times, maybe you will take transit. And it's interesting. I'm not sure how they're going to implement it. If you know these roads, and I'm sure most of you do, it's not exactly clear cut as to where, I mean, I know where the Gardiner starts and where the DVP starts, but how the heck they're ever going to enforce this, too? And if, you know, for things like if you're a courier or whatever, and you go in and out every several times a day, and I've done it in my own working life, I don't know how that's going to be taken care of. I kind of like the London idea, which I think this is, might be somewhat based on, because and you want to talk about a cash cow, the congestion charge in London, England.
Mm-hmm.
My goodness, they've raised, it's like something like £2.6 billion in the past 10 years, but they have like a circle zone, and there's... It kind of makes more sense. There's particular hours where you can travel in that zone where there's no charge. Then there's others where you do. And I think there's people that have flaunted it, particularly in the diplomatic community. Like Obama had to pay a fine because they went into the congestion zone and didn't pay. Now that's a bit of a different world. But as you know, there are lots of countries and places to do this. I remember the tolls on the Burlington Skyway. It's like you had to throw change to a thing, pays
yeah.
for the bridge. This would be a bit more permanent, of course. But as you were saying, like, it's either this or what do they do? The land transfer tax goes up, or they bring back that vehicle registration tax that everybody
Which,
hated. Again,
yeah,
it
Rob
was like,
Ford essentially
was
went
it,
on.
$60?
Yeah.
You know, $60 on that is probably less than getting dinged every single time you take the Gardiner or the DVP in or out.
I think what they were – they haven't talked specifically about what this would look like. I mean, it's being discussed in the mayor's executive meeting today. And I looked before the show to see if like any information had come out of that. Nothing's kind of come out of that yet, so
nothing
I don't know.
Officially.
I don't know what they're talking – but I think one of the things – one of the possibilities is it could be like a 407 kind of situation where it you know, it catches your license plate and it sends you a thing, or you can get the little,
something like a transponder.
The transponder, that's mm-hmm. right. Where you can, you know, go on unlimited times, and that would help out with the couriers, as you're saying, like paying on a yearly basis a smaller fee. I think where this is probably going to be particularly effective is one of the problems with this situation is commuters. So people who don't live in Toronto, but people who live in like Mississauga and Burlington and Oshawa and all these places around Toronto who then drive into Toronto every day for work, who are essentially those are the people who are causing the congestion, especially mm-hmm. in the early morning and in the late afternoon, the rush hour times. So this dings them. This spreads the hurt around. So it's not entirely on the onus of people in Toronto, many of whom, I mean, especially people in downtown Toronto, many of whom walk or use transit already or bike or what have you. But for the people who are coming in every day from communities around Toronto who want the white picket fence lifestyle while making the downtown core bucks, this is who it's going to include as well. So it's kind of like the Solomon solution by sort of spreading the pain around to all those who are making traffic more difficult in the city.
Yeah, and that's been an argument with Toronto for a long time, how the GTA feed into it, and they people go into town and do this and that, use the highway and the services and don't pay a dime. And it's like, well, how do you get that? You need to do something like this to raise the money. I think, what's the goal? $200 million a year? That's nothing to sneeze at, right?
So, yeah.
And Tori was at the York University subway station, which is going to be open, I think, by late next year,
mm-hmm.
probably for the September opening of school starting again.
That makes sense.
And he used it as a bit of a, you know, to make some talking points about this potential revenue stream, as they call it. And it's interesting that you went there, because if I understand it right, the York U stop is the first new subway stop in 14 years.
Yeah.
So that's, and there's obviously the Scarborough subway, the one stop special going in for the billions, or I'm not even sure what the heck's happening with that one. That's a separate world and probably a bit of a white, not a white elephant, but it's got shades of lemon, I think.
Well, yeah,
but at least it's happening. You know, the more transit you put in, people will take it. Although the Shepherd Line, another story. I don't know if that met expectations. We could talk about transit all day. It's something we do. But I can't see this. I think it'll be one of those things that initially there'll be a bit of pain. But it was interesting. Patrick Brown, his mm-hmm. comment on it was like this. He called it a liberal plan.
Yeah.
Which isn't entirely accurate. And then you can point to the conservatives and say, okay, well, you're the guys that sold off the toll road to Spain or whoever it was. And, you know, they're going to do the same thing. If you get a like uber conservative in Toronto, they're going to sell off the whoever's maintaining the toll infrastructure to balance your budget artificially.
I mean, also, interestingly,
stupid.
John Tory, former leader of the Progressive Conservative
Party.
Yeah,
exactly.
So it's hardly a liberal idea.
I don't think he meant small L liberal either. Like,
yeah, that's
I
what I gathered.
About Patrick Brown sometimes. I really do.
That's what I gathered.
And his new kid, but that's, we'll talk about him
his
some other
new
time.
Boy, that
the boy.
Patrick Brown and that boy of his.
Did you see him getting slaughtered in that scrum?
Oh, yeah.
This is a bit of an aside, folks, but there's lots of asides. Like, we're not even talking pipelines this week. That's coming.
That was a cluster F of epic proportions.
Oh, I almost felt sorry.
I don't mean the scrum. I mean how he ducked getting sworn in that he didn't have to vote in that. So that the sky fell on him as it was by ducking it. But, I mean, he should have just sucked it up. And, I mean... Anyway,
should have avoided that scrum. I'm sure he's pro anti tolls, right?
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah,
I doubt it's even come up. But you talked about pain. That's the only way this is going to happen is mm-hmm. if people start to feel pain. I remember commuting to Toronto a couple times a week for a job in 2009 on the Greyhound. But this was when like gas prices were like $2 a liter, $3 a liter. Maybe it wasn't that high.
No, but
maybe I'm thinking a gallon in the States. But I mean,
$1.33, $1.40.
Yeah, when this was like when gas prices were
in 2008, post crash.
Yeah, when gas prices were super high.
Yeah,
Greyhound bus was packed every mm-hmm. day.
Why? Because it was expensive to take your car and sit it in traffic for an hour waiting to get where you're going. That is what motivates people, and is taking the pain in the wallet. That's what how you get people to change.
Sure.
So that whenever I hear people going, yeah, gas prices are going down, it's like, you want to improve transit, you want to improve congestion, people have got to feel the pain. You got to make people give up their car.
You're going to feel the pain. That's right. Or crash enough tractor trailers at Milton or wherever, you know, or somewhere down.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
another thing, too. Like, we really only have, like, up this way, unless you go down to the QEW, there's really only one way into Toronto. So, and when that gets clogged, and believe me, I commuted a lot of years by many, many ways and means. And man, you want to talk about pain. Like, there was a point there where it was getting that's when I eventually quit the commute. It became incrementally worse almost monthly. And you leave earlier and earlier, or you stay later and later to avoid it at all costs. And even when you do that, you're still screwed. Mm. But now we have GO trains. They're fairly full. You and I have both been on them in Toronto, and it's like, that's something as well.
They could be fuller at our end. I mean, they start to get full when you get to...
But I mean, once you get to Brampton, that thing is jammed. And even my trick is... You can steal this trick if you want. It's to go to the end car. That was always the thing. You go to the end
car.
That
is excellent advice.
You go to the end car, there's hardly anyone in it. But in this, like, the train I was on the other week, whenever it was, packed.
Mm-hmm.
People standing. Mm-hmm. So we'll need more trains. Mm-hmm. And the only way to pay for them is... stuff like this. Although, GO Train is provincial, but...
Well, yes, that's very true.
So we're going to do a whole nother show on just commuting in general, how people get around from unicycles to electric cars. I don't know.
That'll be our show in the new year. We're going to have a unicycle special. I'm sure we can find someone around here who rides one.
Oh, you seen that guy with the extra tall one on campus? My goodness. I don't know how he gets on it. Anyway.
We'll track him.
Oh, we're diverging, really.
Yes.
Speaking of diverging... Wow, the king of divergence.
Yeah, totally.
Donald.
I'm not sure where to begin with Trump. We've kind of carefully avoided talking about him the last couple of weeks, which has been refreshing. But it's kind of getting serious now. And maybe I'll just say the latest developments in the last couple of days. One is he announced that he's going to have an announcement on December 15th. That he's going to divest himself of his businesses. He's going to sell them so that he can, quote-unquote, dedicate himself wholly to the presidency, because he doesn't want conflict of interest, you know, to get in the way of making America great again. However, he is selling his businesses to his children.
For $1.
Probably. Yeah. So you got to wonder how conflict of interest will be avoided. You know, he's going to sit down for Christmas dinner. So, Eric, how's the... I can't talk about it, Dad. Remember, it's conflict of interest. Yeah, right. Come on. No, and then the other thing is Donald Trump personally saved 1,000 jobs from going to Mexico. There's a carrier plant in Indiana that was going to ship in its entirety to Mexico, ship production to Mexico. And Donald Trump said, hold on a minute. And got them to keep 1,000 jobs in the United States, which he has taken credit for. I mean, perhaps understandably so.
Well, promise kept, really. I mean, they didn't keep all the jobs, but...
I do want to point out this.
I hate to give him credit for anything, but you know, he did say that he mentioned it all the time.
Sure. I do want to mention one thing, though, and that is from Paul Krugman, who said that Trump would have to do a carrier-sized deal once a week for 30 years to save as many jobs as the auto bailout saved.
Mm-hmm.
So just like to put that in relief, and it's sort of been driving me crazy today when I was watching CNN and the other Wolf Blitzer like saying, well, you did save 1,000 jobs. It's like, well, Obama saved millions of jobs. But the same people who are patting Trump on the back now took cricket bats to Obama for doing it on a grander scale, for doing it all at once. And it's just, and the double standard kind of drives me crazy.
Well, Trump could
Freudian
definitely
slip?
A faux pas. He could probably save 1,000 jobs and just pay those people to do nothing from the Trump change that he has in his pockets, right?
Oh, no doubt.
Or Ivanka or whoever's going to have the control of the Trump change now. So that you're right about that too, and the promises to the coal fields and the promises. He started mentioning clean coal, which is something that Obama used to mention as well. which is also a bit of a misnomer for coal in general, as whether the Rust Belt and the coal fields are going to get restarted again remains to be seen. I think it's probably a no just because of the price of coal is in the toilet.
Yeah.
And it's going to stay there for a long time where renewables are not. Like, it's just not happening for it. It's a commodity that's become a persona non grata a bit. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that deal came about. Like, what had to. I've seen a couple of mentions of crony capitalism is sort of like, okay, you keep this here, and then I'll give you this when I'm finally in the big chair. Who knows? Not proven, but it has to be a deal like that, obviously, to keep it. Other things happening too are the recounts. There's talk of recounts in certain states. I don't know if that's going to make that big a difference. Jill Stein spearheading it in one, and I think there's groups of Democrats in the others.
Yeah, Wisconsin and I think Michigan's the other where there's going to oddly enough, they just finished the count in Michigan.
okay, we're done. What? That was a month ago.
I think Pennsylvania, they want to do a recount in Pennsylvania, but I think they missed the deadline for getting that paperwork in.
So the other thing happening, too, is that there seems to be, and I don't know if it's going to amount to anything, but it's one of those small stories that might. There's the faithless electors of the Electoral College. There are people in the Electoral College that seem to be scheming. So, of course, this will add to the Trump conspiracy theory that it's a joke, although he loves it now. But he's not going to love it if this happens. And that they're trying to convince other members of the Electoral College. They're also calling them the Hamilton electors. I guess it's something to do with Hamilton made the statement about, we have the Electoral College, so we don't have a complete... He didn't say nincompoop, but it was... if somebody's completely unfit or unqualified, it's sort of like, in case of emergency, break the glass. The Electoral College says, no, get this person. So it sounds like they're trying to rustle up a neutral Republican. And some Democrats, there's seven so far, are saying that this is supposed like the ultimate in compromise. They're saying that, well, if you can come up with somebody, let's just pick Mitt Romney, whoever. Mm. Name a Republican off the top of your head. Little Marco. We'll back them. It would have to be somebody a bit more neutral than that. They're saying that, well, okay, we'll go Republican if you get person X. Now, seven, not very many so far, but if this thing tends to snowball, they only really, I think it's they need 37. They need to convert 37 minds to either this mindset or get them to defect and maybe even go Clinton.
Yeah.
If the 270 doesn't happen for Trump, then he's not the president. So I don't know if this is just wishful thinking on the people of the Electoral College part, or they put it out there and all the people that are still terrified of Trump America getting their hopes up. But I thought it was kind of interesting because, you know, who's to say it couldn't happen? If it exists for that reason, I mean, enough of them, maybe, I don't know, do they have to wine and dine them or something? It's like the Olympics.
Yeah,
who gets the Olympics? Who gets the presidency? Who has the best caviar? I don't know.
It's interesting, but I do see this kind of going down the road as... if you remember what happened with the coalition in 2008 here in Canada, the non-confidence, and then we'll have an NDP Liberal bloc coalition, because sadly people are sort of wholly unaware of how their system of government works, and so there'll be a lot of people who'll see this as a coup, even though they're using the tools of democracy as invented by the founding fathers. I also think people kind of want to just kind of get down with it, and just I think there's a lot of people who are thinking to themselves, the only way out is through. We'll get through the 4 years of President Trump, as crazy and as damaging as that might potentially be, but you know, if anything, it'll give fuel to the fodder for the midterms in 2018, and maybe hopefully flipping Congress for the Democratic favor, and then hopefully getting everybody's act together for 2020 and making Trump a one-termer. So.
Yeah, but we are living in this Stranger Things Have Happened world, too, right?
For sure.
I know. I mean, I guess I personally wouldn't write it off completely, but I think you're right. I think it's almost like they've accepted this. It's like there's going to be 4 years of preparation to defeat this guy. And I get the impression that if he doesn't leave before his term is up, I just get the impression, regardless of who he's tried to... You know, who he has wooed to now, are really going to feel it in 4 years. Why did I see that story about Kentucky? Or is one of these places that was solid Trump, and it's like, oh, our healthcare benefits are going to be wrecked, and this is going to be wrecked. Oh. And they're having buyer's remorse already. They're like, oh, you know, maybe this wasn't such a good idea. Well, it's already rumbling. It hasn't been sworn in yet, and they're already rumbling about it, right? So,
well, Trump's been rewinding on a lot of things. He was rewinding on, you know, he called the Supreme Court case that allowed gay marriage. He called that settled law. And then you have Mike Pence and other people come out and like, no, we're going to be totally anti-gay in this administration. and that's kind of been panned out by who they've appointed so far, from Attorney General designate Jeff Sessions to, you know, other people have been appointed.
And yet they want Elton John to play the inauguration, right? As late as that rumor. Like,
they can only, they only want...
He's married to a Canadian guy, by the way. So it's like, what?
They only want Elton John because Liberace's dead. So let's just put that to rest right now.
That's right, Adam. He's gone.
But yeah, so, and then he was telling 60 Minutes Trump that, you know, there's some good stuff in Obamacare, and, you know, like the keep staying on your parents' plan until you're 26, or being able to have be on the plan with pre-existing conditions, and it just on and on and on like this. And
he's the backtrackingist.
Yeah, and it's like, well, you
the
can't.
Word is now.
The Republicans have been dead set on repealing Obamacare, the whole kit and caboodle. They haven't been like, well, there's some good stuff in Obamacare. No, the message has been, and Trump himself sent this message, Obamacare is terrible. We're going to get rid of it and then replace it with something terrific. That is still ambiguous in terms of what terrific looks like and what it includes. The last thing I want to say about Trump is the Romney thing.
Oh, yeah. They're having, like, gourmet meal together. I saw that photo.
Well, not just...
Is that from Twitter? Or?
Oh, I think
everything's
that was,
from Twitter.
Well,
yeah.
They were at this fancy New York restaurant. Trump's just doing the Trump thing. You know, he used to go to fancy restaurants, and now he's president-elect. He just does whatever he... Anyway.
We're going to buy this restaurant. I love it so much.
Maybe.
Well, it's conflict
but
of interest.
But no, the...
Yeah.
Well, no, that's right. Exactly. a lot of people are because this is the Secretary of State that we're talking about, the fourth in
potential.
Line for.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, well, yeah, that's what he's apparently interviewing Mitt Romney for. But a lot of people are saying, oh, he's just kind of toying with Mitt Romney because Mitt Romney was like the most vocal anti-Trumper. And I'm watching this thinking to myself, so you have the president-elect of the United States basically using the fourth in line of succession to screw around with his political rival live on TV as the nation. Like, what kind of thing is that for a 45th president of the United States to do? Anyway.
It's like something straight out of the Apprentice TV show, though, right? Which I only saw once. Painful to watch.
And he said on Twitter that only he knows who the finalists are for the cabinet.
There you go.
So he's like using the language of reality TV.
Admit you're fired. Yeah, well,
he's dying to say that. He's dying to say that in Romney's face.
After canapes or whatever.
We will see. Oh, that sounds delicious.
Yikes.
I'd like to be fired over canapes. We'll see what happens. Because that's it for this week's edition of Open Sources. Just a programming note, Leanne Piper will be with us next week. So if you have questions for her, send them our way. And then, of course, our December 15th show will be Ask Mayor Cam Part 2. So Cam Guthrie, Mayor of City of Guelph, will be here. We want lots of questions for him because he'll be here for the whole dang hour. And then we'll have our holiday shows on the 22nd and the 29th. 22nd, we're going to be doing Movies Part 2, Favorite Movies. We're going to focus on Docs this year. And then on the 29th, we'll have our year-end awards show. And then we'll be back fresh in the new year after that with more live shows. You can stay connected to us at opensourcesguelph.com, Open Sources Newswire on Facebook, at @OS_Guelph on Twitter. And, of course, go to iTunes or Podbean and find the Guelph Politicast channel where you can get the Open Sources Guelph podcast. You can connect with me on Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson or go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Twitter, also Scotty Hertz on Facebook. I blog at The Spanner Book. And, yeah, those are the places you can reach us, so... Reach out and touch someone.
Yes.
Reach out. Or at least send us a message. Sure. Questions, especially Cam and
yes.
For Leanne.
Yes.
Bring it, people.
Bring it.
We're here to serve.
Yes. And not
that's
just
our
canapes.
New, that's our new new catchphrase.
Anyway, I believe DJ Sounds Good to Me will be
available.
A repeat. Well, I know she personally is not here to be available, but likely we'll have a repeat for her at the top of the hour.
Yes, we do, actually.
Here on CFRU, 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio. And we will be back here with more open sources next week at 5.